All right, we are live and rolling. Chair, the floor is yours.
Good evening. This is the Harbor Advisory Board for Morro Bay, California. It's Thursday, September 1st, 2022. We are meeting in the Vets Memorial Hall on Surf Street. There we also have Zoom, which you can zoom in and do public comment at that time. Let's move forward. Lori, do we have a quorum? We have a quorum. We'll call this meeting to order. Could we have a moment of silence right now? Thank you. And Cal will be leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, for all.
Okay. So at this time, we do chair and board member and liaison announcements. So I'll start off with Gene.
Okay. I talked to some of the oyster guys this morning. Looks like the eelgrass is a nuisance to them, but they're able to continue on. They're doing really well. I talked to the sport fishing guys. Salmon season finished yesterday. And there was a few salmon caught recently. There's been some halibut they've been catching. They don't do halibut trips, but the smaller private boats are going out, and they're doing really well on halibut up towards Cayucas. And I saw two nice halibut caught in the bay yesterday. So, and eelgrass continues to be, I would say, a nuisance, but it's pretty darn thick. So, that's it.
Thank you so much. Cal Myers.
My community outreach is community outreach, right? Yeah, been mostly liaison with the live boards. We had a meeting. There's been a lot of concern about the cleanliness of the bathrooms and the showers, specifically around the boat ramp. So we met with several of the live boards and Greg Qualick and a lot of the maintenance crew about 2 weeks ago. And basically the conclusion was is the over the last month, they've done a lot of work to limit who has access specifically to the showers and been cleaning it twice a day, and they've been really happy with the, at least with the bathrooms down there, showers specifically. So they've been pretty pleased. They're just going to continue to keep it up.
I have a question. Is there do they close the bathroom after a certain time at night and open them up in the morning?
Yeah, they've had a number of issues with transient people, you know, spending the night in there. So they do close it around, I think it's 8 p.m. in the evening, and then open it up around 6 in the morning. They do clean it twice a day, first thing in the morning and then in the evening. So, and like I said, the live boards have all, the people that use it regularly are pretty pleased over the last 4 to 5 weeks of the cleanliness has improved greatly. Also the, not the Harvard, what's Becca's title, Eric? Becca keeps an eye on the number of quarters that show up and they can tell if, you know, there's a normal cadence of, you know, they get 12 people take showers, they get 12 quarters of, you know, a day or whatever. And Becca has noticed that when the number of quarters increases dramatically, it's probably time to change the code again. That means somebody's using it that's not supposed to. So it's worked out pretty well. At least in the short term, they're going to continue to monitor it. The other thing that Greg asks is that the live boards report in a consistent way, use the work order form on the website instead of, like, you know, calling Becca or texting me and I send an email to Greg, that type of thing, so they can keep track of it a lot better. So the whole meeting was super positive. So it was, you know, the live boards came over, everybody got to air their grievances, and it was very positive. That's all I have.
And
nothing for me.
Okay. Member Sean Green.
There are two quick things.
That was the best thing I ever said. I wasn't even on the microphone. There are community grants available up to the pool of money that council has put forth in the city is about $50,000. Youth-specific nonprofits are eligible. Also wanted to announce that our Morro Bay Triathlon, our local triathlon, not the the Ironman event next May, but our local one that happens every November, is now open for signups. They're back from COVID and hope to have a successful event this year like they did last year.
All right, Member Witkowski.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to call out was October 8th is looking to be a super fun day in Morro Bay. The Morro Bay Rotary Club has their duck derby starting at 8:30 a.m. to 10. And then the Maritime Family Fun Day will be from 10 to 4. So a great time to bring kids to Morro Bay.
All right, perfect. Thank you. So my announcements are with the Morro Bay Chamber, events that are going on next weekend. We have the Avocado Margarita Festival, which is completely redone, and it's accessing different points of our beautiful Morro Bay in Tidelands and as well as the Rock. As far as businesses along the Embarcadero, business was always good during when it was inside, but I think that accessing the points where we have a little bit more parking might show a really great improvement for everybody. So I'm really hoping that this event is a success and continues to be, because I think it would be an increase in people throughout Morro Bay and help with the tourism industry and bring in a lot of people who we might not have seen before. So I think it's going to reach a lot of people who maybe haven't come to Morro Bay, which is a lot of situations that I've been seeing lately with Europeans and just people who have never been to Morro Bay before and that are just amazed at how beautiful and serene and what an enjoyable place to visit. And as well as with the Morro Bay Chamber, they're doing the Breakfast on the Bay. The next one is going to be September 21st. We do have a presentation today by Erica Crawford, and maybe she can go into a little bit more detail of what might be on the menu for next time. One of the eventual things that we're going to do, which I'd hope that we'd all want to be a part of, is talking about Tidelands Trust properties, how it's so unique, and what does it mean for business owners in there. And so that will eventually be possibly a Breakfast on the Bay topic. Last time that they had Breakfast on the Bay, we talked about homes, and they brought in a lot of different people, nonprofits, government folks that talked about current situations and possible solutions and moving forward with something that we all are going to encounter in our lives, not homelessness, but the homes situation. So anyway, one of the people that I met, I wanted to do a shout out to them, which is Los Osos Cares, and it's losososcares.com. They just do some amazing things that I didn't even think of that really help people who might just be a little downtrodden, and it just helps them get their balance again with things like food and clothing. They even help with registration for your car, because sometimes you just have to be in your car for a while and you can't have it impounded. And I just thought that was an amazing way for them to access something that they could help, and gas cards. So I just really enjoyed her conversation and the things that they're doing to help the community. So if you ever have a chance to either visit them or donate, they're a great cause to put forth too. That's it for my announcements. And do we have our liaison, our city council liaison, possibly in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We do not have any attendees in the queue.
Okay. All right. Well, then that will bring us to the close of announcements. And our next one is presentation. So we are lucky enough to have Erica Crawford here this evening to talk about things going on in the chamber.
Things going on in the chamber. Okay, good. Thank you very much, Chair Hansen. He's also one of my bosses on my board of directors for the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. It's really nice to see all of you. Some of you are familiar and some of you are not. So thanks for having me. I tend to talk quickly, so if I talk too fast, just let me know. I'm sharing with you a presentation that I gave to the City Council on some of our economic development efforts for the last quarter, but I'm happy to take questions about who we are and what we do once I'm through. So I just start with who we are, what we do. So we are an independent nonprofit. So we're a 501c6 nonprofit, a membership organization. We serve our members. Chambers sometimes have a reputation for being a parties, parades, and pageants sort of an organization. We have spent the last 6 years transitioning into really a more advocacy-driven organization. So we are a 3Cs chamber. We catalyze business growth, champion a strong community, and convene community leaders and influencers. We do that. I'm a staff of 2.5, so I'm full-time. I'm the president and CEO. I have Lindsay Hansen, who's on my staff, who's our membership director. And a Morro Bay High School grad and grew up in our community. And Jody Ollier is a part-time employee for us, but she's really the glue that keeps it all going. And then I have a 12-member board of directors. These are business owner-operators, employees who are in our community. They're all members in good standing. They're elected to 3-year terms every fall. So we actually have a call open now. We have a nominating committee that's recruiting for 5 open spots for next year's board. We also have a very active 13-member governmental affairs committee. We have a legislative platform that the board of directors has approved that allows me to come out and share policy positions that the business community feels passionate about. So we do really big deep dives on planning. We have fiscal sustainability recommendations for the city. So we really look into governmental affairs there. And then we have a fund committee, an ambassadors committee, 7 people who are out kind of mentoring new members that are coming in, going out to new businesses, finding out what's going on, word on the street. They meet once a month, and they also make recommendations to the board for business spotlight awards that come out once a month in Morro Bay Life. And what I'm going to share with you is some of our economic development work. So we have a contract for services with the city of Morro Bay. We serve at the council's, the contract is at the council's pleasure, and it's with board approval that we work on this scope of work or this line of effort. And we work in close coordination with city staff. So our scope, the overview of what we do relative to economic development, is designated proactive representation. There is no economic development staff person in the city staff. So then we work together to do some tactical execution of economic development strategy. Member Green might remember back in the day when we did the downtown tree lighting. That was sort of early days of our contract work and trying to make a difference to kind of showcase our community in a different way. And all of this is in an effort to preserve and materially enhance Morro Bay's small town character. Nobody's trying to change us from what we were or what we are into something different. We're just trying to enhance who we are. So your ED contractor and work, that's kind of me. So I work regularly, weekly meetings with the city manager. We've been doing that for 4 years. And we have every other week meetings with the community development director to discuss sort of projects that are in the pipeline and economic development strategy implementation. And then I make as many development review team meetings as I can. That's a staff meeting, city engineers, planning staff to review projects that are under review or applications that have come in, and I step in to try and be of assistance as an applicant and city coordinator, like a translator between the two. And then I also serve on the REACH Practitioners Network. I'll tell you a little bit about REACH. It's important, I think, for our community to understand what it is. It's the Regional Economic Action Coalition. It's our regional economic development arm. They're professionals. They're 501c3. And that's serving both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. And right now, according to them, we're in sort of a once-in-a-lifetime moment for funding. And that's because of ARPA funds coming out of the federal government and because of an unprecedented California budget surplus. So REACH is leading an effort to get a comprehensive economic development strategy done through the Economic Development Association. That's a federal group. And also a State of California Community Economic Resilience Fund effort. So I'm serving on the Strategic Planning Committee for the SEDS. If anybody has questions about that, you can come at me. It's kind of, we can talk about it later. But it is the effort is to get a 5-year plan together. And if your projects and your community has things that are in this strategic plan, it becomes easier to apply for funding in the future. If you don't have these projects in SEDS, then it's a little bit more difficult. SURF is a much larger effort. It's actually a 6-county partnership, but it's being led through REACH and the Economic Development Group in Ventura and the one in Monterey. So I just wanted you to know that Morro Bay is part of this regional economic development effort. Also through REACH, there are, as I'm sure Eric has told you, or Harbor Director Endersby, that we have a lot of energy going around waterfront infrastructure. There's a local study that's being conducted through REACH that's looking at just at Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County waterfront infrastructure to assess what is and isn't viable for use for both the commercial space industry and the offshore wind industry. So we just received an update. Eric and I are both on the steering committee for that with the engineers, and they're making great headway. I think they're going to be done in the fall with their work, and then REACH will be debuting that work. So that's sort of the background, designated proactive representation, both in the city and in the region. And then on the tactical side, what do I do every day? What am I doing? Roadmap to success, we provide on-the-ground business assistance. I'll just slip through. These are some of the businesses that we are interacting with in North Morro Bay because of the construction that's been going on Quintana. There's been a ton of revitalization in the downtown. It's really nice to see businesses, both new and existing businesses, making new and refreshed investment in the community. We coordinate sometimes with Morro Bay Police if there are issues that are occurring with transient population, or sometimes with Public Works if there are issues with power. And we did connect members of the commercial fishing industry, restaurants, retails, and nonprofits with the ARPA Small Business Grant Program that was done through the County of San Luis Obispo. As part of the translating, you know, kind of working with Libertine, master leaseholders, I also served with, on a master lease update, so kind of have been in the mix on waterfront issues for some time. We have a really cool new business downtown where the old grandma's frozen yogurt and waffles was. Baby Dudes is opening this weekend on Saturday. Very excited. There's a new boutique hotel that's opening up in North Morro Bay. Scout Coffee, of course, is coming in. They've bought the Bank of America building, and we're looking forward to a 2023 open. And then I think this is probably more of the exponential impact that our efforts are trying to get to. The chamber takes sort of the back seat on the catalyst projects, but more of a support role. So with offshore wind and with the Vistra battery project, we're aware and kind of engaged in that, but we do defer to city staff for taking leadership roles in there. Now the last piece, and then I'll probably finish. We did a business improvement district feasibility study. We hired a contractor and did some extensive outreach to both the downtown and the waterfront businesses, asking them sort of a simple question: what could be done to improve your business, especially in the shoulder season and in the midweek? As you know, the tourism industry has its own business improvement district that's kind of marketing to outside of the area, but it leaves sort of a vacuum on who's marketing to within our own county and who's marketing non-lodging businesses. So we debuted that study actually just this last Monday at Pizza Port, supporting a local business. We had probably 30, 35 businesses come out and a lot of kind of good buzziness about it. We had the CEO of the Downtown Slow Association, Bettina Swigger, come out and talk about some of the challenges and opportunities of business improvement districts and what they're up to in San Luis Obispo. And what came out of that was a desire to understand a little bit more about what a Harbor Enterprise Fund is and how Harbor works. So we're probably going to bring that back around. I think I'll just finish here. As Charisse mentioned, we do have a breakfast program. These are last month's flyers. We do monthly mixers, and the next one is on the second Wednesday of September in downtown. And then the next Breakfast on the Bay, we're looking at doing a topic on political participation, given that it's election season. And of course, the Avocado Festival is happening, and it's really, really exciting that it's happening. It's completely reimagined. We are anchoring the festival at Tidelands Park. And Board Member Myers, when you were talking about some of the liveaboard interaction that you've been having, I just want to make sure that the community is aware that we are not closing any streets for this event, nor are we blocking boater access or ocean access at the boat launch ramp. So we have volunteer police department who are gonna help us with some traffic control because we wanna calm traffic. We wanna make sure that people are driving kind of slowly through there. But there will be, they will have a clipboard of people who are able to go down liveaboards who park in that parking area. And anybody who's with a boat trailer will be able to use business as usual. And then the liveaboards who use the restroom down at Tidelands, that restroom will not be open to the public. We're replacing that. So we have a whole string of porta potties through Harvey's Honey Huts, and we have a volunteer who's going to allow liveaboards to access that restroom, but I think it's going to be primarily locked, and so kind of use them in the morning or in the evening. But we're kind of working on all of the finer details, but the idea is to ensure that liveaboards have access to the things that they're paying for. I think that's it. I talked a lot. A little glaze over, so. Did I talk? That was slow. Okay, that's good.
All right.
But happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Erica. I personally have had you as an assistant or somebody who helped me with situations that I needed guidance on. You were really quick to give me the tools. I mean, like, as soon as you're like, what do you need? Okay, I'll link you to this person. And, you know, it's just you're a super resourceful chamber CEO. And then all of the different functions that you do, they really aid in unveiling what might be the problem with, you know, you could say that, oh, I'm just not doing really good business, but you actually go in and, you know, break it up and they find out like, hey, oh, okay, well, maybe we could do this differently. And I think that you just give a really great atmosphere for them to even learn what the actual issue is and then give them resources to fix it and ideas. So as the mediator of those, I think you do a great job. With that, I'm gonna open up any questions. Cal?
Yeah, Erica, there was a couple things that caught my ear as part of the budget committee, the offshore wind piece, and I think there was some money about, you know, potentially improvements in the infrastructure along the water. You know, one of the things we look at is there's a ton of stuff that Eric needs to fix down there and he needs a pile of cash to do it. Is there any opportunities there to, you know, pay for a new pier or fix a revetment wall? Is that something that, you know, is feasible in the next 2 to 3 calendar years?
Well, as you're aware, the city, and we wrote a letter of support, received some support from Congress and the investment for the North T Pier, I think it was. So we wrote a letter of support
for that. But that's like one of 12 that we have on our list.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah. I mean, diversifying revenue and increasing revenue is a business practice, and you all run an enterprise fund. So making sure that you are receiving revenue for the asset that you're managing is really important. So, you know, I'm happy to share with you some of the legislative work we've done and advocacy work. But yeah, it's an incredible asset, but it is it's in need of repair, right?
Yeah, so, it was built 60 years ago, and you know, maintenance over time.
Yeah,
but I guess the question is there opportunities there to?
I see opportunity. Okay, yeah, I do. I think that we all need to have hard conversations, and I appreciate what you said, Charisse, about facilitating those. Or you know, kind of. I think one of the ethos. There are a couple things that we live by with the chamber and volunteers and the staff is that we want to act with civility first, right? And that it's about fixing problems and not fixing blame. And so making sure that we're really evaluating what's happening and then just kind of coming at it in a very civil way and having really hard conversations about how to fix things. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, totally. I'm happy to have all those conversations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have two questions. The first one, where do you generally get your funding? You mentioned the city. The contract with the city, I've seen a couple of our big title sponsors. Can you explain where your funding comes from?
I lost my, oh, it's back. We're a membership organization, so we are like a trade association. So we provide service to our investors. So everything from the membership that we have, and that's why I have a membership director, making sure that our business owners and people who want to serve on our committees are feeling like they're a part of something that is good for the community and good for doing business. So creating an economy of opportunity. We do derive some revenue from the programs that we do, so some of the events. Events look really profitable if you don't count labor toward them. So we're becoming a lot more diligent about tracking time and making sure that we're having a real assessment of what net revenue looks like from events. That's why I talked about transitioning to a 3Cs chamber from a parties chamber. And then, yes, our contract with the City of Morro Bay. We've been in contract for a specific scope of services with the city for, I think this is year 4. And that's our funding right now. We hustle for every dollar we make, Sean.
The other question I have, because the chamber does such great work and is so involved in so many different aspects in the city, being here for now 7 years, I see the chamber having far more influence than really any advisory board. And we're wondering, in what ways can advisory boards, or I'm wondering at least, in what ways can advisory boards become a better asset to the city in the way that you guys have become?
Question. I don't know if I have the answer. We are not a city entity. So we are able to kind of look from the outside looking in and provide that sort of, the bottom line is that communities thrive when businesses thrive. And I think once we got that mindset going and said, cash registers ringing mean police on the streets, fire, mean paved street, the sales tax measures, all these things are important. And then it also means that you have people who are working in your community, earning, paying tax, shopping locally. So I guess it's a compelling argument. You've got all these people who are employers, and we're trying to kind of keep our community thriving through business. And we're very specific, I think, in our point of view, or we try to be at least. So very mission-driven, mission-aligned organization. But I don't think that we're any more. We're not a city agency, so I don't think it's a. It's a comparison I can make. Sure.
All right. Thanks. Huh? Oh, I'm so sorry. I did not see that.
I had a question on how the chamber handles differing goals and interests with the city vision as part of the economic development contract versus the local business interests.
Good question. So we're an organization that's run by a board of directors, and then we have our own advisory boards. So the board of directors has a strategic planning retreat every November. We bring in a third-party facilitator and kind of set the strategic vision for our organization and how we are going to be directing our effort, directing me. They hire me, I hire staff. We provide input on community goals and city council goals and things like that, and all of the input we provide is from the business perspective. So we're constantly surveying our members and providing outreach, and we're out in the field all the time. In terms of what we do for the economic development and the way that I'm interacting with city staff, that's all, what are we hearing on the street? What are the policies? What's going on? I'm not giving you a great answer because they kind of have a firewall between them. We have chamber activities and then we have economic development activities, but I'm constantly keeping my board abreast and aware of what we're doing to help our local businesses. Because everything that we're doing economic development-wise is about getting cash registers ringing, getting career pathways and supply chain kind of developed, and making sure that we're kind of maturing or evolving our economy. So I think it's kind of all related. But we are not, we're separate. We can advocate for positions as an outside agency, but then as we're working, and it's all kind of in our scope and in our contract. All the lawyers figured that out, so.
Anything else? Thank you, Erica. Yeah. I'm gonna just say one little thing as far as Sean's question. I do know that something that I've done in the past is directly contact my city council members individually and talk to them about different things, and them getting to know you is a big part of it too. So even though this is an open forum and we talk and communicate throughout it, her as not being part of us can have those conversations, whereas we're, you know, in the public.
I strive to keep every member of council informed equally, and that's another thing I've learned. You know, you
right.
want to make sure that everything is, that we're being very clear and very, I guess it's a very deliberative process to get to a position, and once that position is arrived at, you speak with one voice, and that's the way it works.
So. Right. So, yeah, I would say individually, any time that I've ever not has a HAB member, if I've felt really strongly about something, having a conversation with city council is always a good avenue to do that, too, and then get to know you. And so as far as HAB goes, if you're on it, you know, they know that you're doing the research. They know what you're talking about. So that's my two cents on that one. Thank you so much, Erica.
Okay. Thanks very much for your time.
Okay, so next we go into public comment, and seeing no one in our audience, I kind of miss our 1 to 2 visitors that we had last month. Hyland, do we have anybody in our audience?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you so very much. All right, now we have our consent calendar. We have one item, which is the Harbor Department status report. Would anybody like to pull item A1?
Thank you. That's not the button, that's the light. That's the button.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to defer to Cal. We've been working together on this, but he's got the written material over there.
Are you talking about consent calendar, the Harbor Department status report?
Oh,
like
sorry.
Eric would
I
give that?
I jumped in when I shouldn't have been there. Sorry.
Okay. It's all right. So do I have, since I have no, what are you pointing to pull? Oh, okay. Mary?
I'd like to pull the Harbor Department status report.
Okay. Eric, she would like to pull the Harbor
I'll
Department
second
status
that.
Report. Okay. Seconding it, motioning and seconding. Eric, would you like to take it away? Or just take questions.
If you have any questions or particular item you want to look at.
Yeah, I had a question on the eelgrass issues that you have been having with getting your boats underway. Do you have a proposed solution, or have you identified a solution that allows you to operate?
Sometimes it just depends on looking at the tides and moving our boats if we have to. We're kind of on the outside of the flow corner. You know, as the current goes around a corner, things start to go towards the outside of the corner, and we're on the outside when the tide's coming inward, and so it tends to come into the pier where we are. Coast Guard doesn't get hit by it because they're kind of hidden behind the pier. So we move our boats if we have to get them out of the way, sometimes the night before if we think the next morning's going to build up. Otherwise, eelgrass, I mean, one person's problem is another person's treasure. I mean, it's protected habitat. It's critical habitat for the health of the bay. It's a great thing that there's that much eelgrass around. Operationally, not so great. So it's just something you got to deal with. We just push it out of the way and get boat hooks and drag it out and run our props and prop wash it out and just deal with it.
Mary, I'd like to chop in on that one. If you have a boat in the water, you've got to make sure that your intakes are fairly clear because the eelgrass will just clog right up, and then more than one boat's had overheating from the eelgrass. I'm all in favor of the eelgrass. I think it's a good sign. As you know, I take care of most of the moorings in the bay, and as I'm pulling up the moorings, I see all the chain and all the growth on them. In the last couple of years, I've seen more growth on all the chain than in the last 20 years. So the eelgrass and the growth and change show that we've got a real healthy bay. So it's good, it's just a nuisance. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I know my little laser. I'm not as good of a sailor with the eelgrass, but I think it's good.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I because there is so much eelgrass, there's sometimes too much of one thing is can't might not be good. So I always wonder if we're going to get to that point where it's just too much eelgrass that's blocking eelgrass from growing. So anyway, we'll see, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a blanket over the top, and then it can't grow under the bottom. So anyway, it's seasonal, so it dies off, and then it should start again. So, okay, so can we have a motion to receive and file, or were there any other questions about?
I motion to receive and file.
Sure, I'll second it. I know my push button.
All right, perfect. Laura, you want to do a vote? Or a...
Member Witkowski?
Yes.
Member Green?
Yes.
Member Vail?
Yes.
Member Hansen?
Yes.
Member Myers?
Yes.
Member O'Brien?
Yes.
Dowdy? And your motion passes.
All right, motion passes. Okay. Business items. We have business item B1, which is update from the Parking Management Paid Parking Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. And we've had some movement on that. So as the chair of that subcommittee, sure. Cal?
Absolutely. So as you said, we haven't done much since we last issued the white paper, basically end of last calendar year. We've been waiting for the Walker study, the follow-on Walker study. A draft was presented not only to the HAB parking subcommittee, but also the other various other advisory groups throughout the city. What we saw was a preliminary draft. Essentially, the study was focusing on the sort of the where of parking. The original study looked at the entire city, including Main Street and other parts of the city. This part now is narrowed down based on council direction to focus really in and around the Embarcadero area, basically from the Harbor Building down towards the end of the waterfront. So they've come up with some preliminary slots along Embarcadero and Front Street where that paid parking may go. There's a couple things. Scott Collins is there, Scott Graham, Stephen Troff, I believe his last name is, Erica, and a few others were there. Again, the focus of the at least the draft was where to put those lots and if it made sense. We spent a lot of time revisiting a few of the issues of all the different stakeholders that are involved in parking down there, because it's not just the businesses, it's the liveaboards, it's the fishermen, all the traffic and the different types of traffic for employees. And some of the unique geography of the area. Specifically, you have to go up the hill, which is relatively steep, employee safety. A couple of the goals from any parking, again, this was from Scott Collins, he doesn't want to issue punitive fines. It's mostly about trying to really optimize the spots that are there, not necessarily adding any per se, making sure that they get flipped and they become valuable assets to the city, where somebody doesn't park in front of a building for 2 days, that type of thing. We didn't really get into how much is it going to cost, but we want it to be reasonable and simple. And again, it would be an initial 1 year pilot just to see how it works, what doesn't, maybe $1 an hour, first hour free. Try to minimize the cost of building it out, but it would still be a significant upfront investment by the city to paint, put kiosks in, or whatever that is. During the last committee, there was always everybody wants to carve out some exemption and make it more difficult to implement and enforce. But the desire was to try to keep it as simple as possible. It's no time limits, just it's $1 an hour, park as long as you need to, and not make the fines. We don't want to hand somebody go to dinner or have a drink at Stacks and end up with a $200 parking bill. That's pretty much it. They're going to continue to study this through the rest of the advisory boards. We'll probably pull together the ad hoc with some of the other larger team that we had from the citizens, the business owners, and at large, talk through it a little bit further and refine some of that input.
That's, I mean, I have a bunch more notes, but that was sort of the highlights that that was covered during that session. All I have for now on that.
Okay, I will put in my notes on this one because I was there. So the takeaway that I got out of this meeting is right now we're solely looking at where the paid parking should be based on the Walker study map, and they lined out quite a few spots that it could be. And so at our next meeting, I hope to bring it to the Harbor Advisory Board to put together our own recommendation and draft a letter and send that to the City Council as far as where we feel like it would be most appropriate, and discuss all of those different items that we have been talking about in the subcommittee, but during the board discussion. Eventually, we'll go into the other details, such as what will the devices look like. So there will be some different choices that may come back to the Harbor Advisory Board for us to give their recommendation, as well as the times of the actual meters, who and how the enforcement will be, and then the price per hour. They do want to get everybody's feedback as far as the making the final decision, but they're going to take it in chunks. So right now it's the locations. So we'll hopefully have that on the next agenda to look at. Eric, did you want to include any comments for that?
No, I have nothing to add. You covered it pretty well between you two.
Okay, so are there any questions from other? Yep, Mary?
Yeah, I just wanted to have one comment for you guys. If we can just make sure that before we start this experiment, we have really clear set goals on how we'll measure it, and what our experiment, like, what is a success that we're going to continue and what is not a success that will stop, because I think we're at risk of, like, the sunk cost fallacy with the fact that we obviously are going to be investing in order to put up the kiosks and painting and things like that. And I just, before we kick this off, want to make sure that everyone is aligned on how we will measure the experiment to decide whether or not it's a success and whether we should continue.
Okay, thank you for adding that. Jean?
Yes, I don't know we're this far down the line yet, but the money generated on the west side of the Embarcadero, will that stay in the enterprise fund?
Currently, my understanding is that the money that it receives will pay for the operation of the pilot program from right now. As far as the Walker study person who was there, he has expectations that it will actually eventually be profitable, and at that point discuss where those funds would go. But for right now, keeping the expectations low, and just know that it would at least create a better parking management system on the Embarcadero that would allow for easier flow for people who want to come and visit. Any other questions? I'm going to open it up to public comment. Seeing no hands raised or any cards that say I want 3 minutes. Oh, Erica would like to speak.
Well, thank you. I just pulled up our policy position on the paid parking, and I've been, pleased to be a participant in the ad hoc, and I've worked with Eric and some of the city staff and Stefan from Walker. But from the chamber's point of view, free parking isn't actually free, and some of the conversation that we've talked about just tonight with Cal Myers about revenue and degrading infrastructure and things like that. This is it's an asset. It's a piece of the city, and with no dedicated funding to improve it, it will continue to degrade and not get addressed. So free parking is in fact not free. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there.
Right, like the fact that the curbs have been painted green and they're kind of green gray now, but we have no funds to pay for them. So to even get changed to gray, so people stop asking me, what does that mean? Can I park there? Okay, so Hyland, do we have anyone in the queue via Zoom?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All righty. So Any other conversational points between the board? Does anybody want to receive and file, make a move, motion?
I move.
Nope, don't need to do
file.
It? Okay.
Nope.
Okay, well, it's out there, right? So now we got to do it. Nope, no receive and file. Okay, we're just receiving and filing. We do not have to make a motion. Yay! Moving on to B2, update from the Marine Services Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities.
Okay, like I said before, I'm going to let Cal handle this. I forgot my notes. We've worked up to and including kind of a white paper, and go Cal.
Thank you, Chris. Chris and I have been working on the Marine Services for quite some time. It was formerly known as, you know, trying to get a boat, an additional boat yard here. After direction from Eric and others in the HAB, we kind of narrowed it down to, as a boat owner today, you know, what services do you have here in the harbor? So we've wrote up about an 8-page paper. We've reviewed it a little bit internally. What we'll do is we'll include it in the agenda for next month. You'll get a copy of it as part of the agenda. We may send it out early. I'm working with Eric to make sure we don't run afoul of the Brown Act on it. But essentially it lists out, you know, what are Marine Services, you know, what is here in the harbor. Also at the very end, we make recommendations to if certain things in the environment change, you know, should we go back and look at it? You know, things like the intake building gets repurposed. Is that something that we want to take a look at? If the existing boat yard goes out of business, you know, is that something that, you know, we want to start to revisit some of those things, or any other significant change? If the demographics change out in the harbor, you know, fishing or the pleasure boats become more predominant out there, is it something that we want to investigate? So we're just going to try to wrap it up and then, you know, put it on the shelf. And take a look at it. We'll probably focus a little bit more on the existing boatyard, is because that particular business, they have to make some investments to get them up to current standards, and I think their lease is near expiration or expired, so they have to make some investments and understand what the plan, gentleman's plan is, and see if we can help them navigate through some of the city and legal requirements. Well, Chris, is that's about it? Anything else you want to add to that?
Well, I think that's it for now. I think that we need to get everybody a copy of this at some point or another, so point by point it can be discussed.
Yeah, I'd really like to get Gene and maybe Jeremiah's input to it. It's pretty short.
So you sent that to, I mean, you put it together and you sent it out, but we didn't get it into the agenda. Eric, Lori, can we put it in the agenda so it's publicly available for next time?
Yes.
Or is it course, but can it be in correspondence for this particular one, or should we put it in for next month?
It'll go in for next month. We didn't get in time to get in the agenda published.
Okay, good, because it's really, thank you so much for doing all of that work. It's a great job. All right, does anybody have any questions for Marine Ad Hoc? Mary? No? Seeing none, I'm going to open up public comment. Did you have one?
Yeah, Chris wants me to ask a question, so I'll come up with one. as part of your process, have you guys come up with any kind of wish lists? I ask this in part because there's going to be some public benefits discussions coming up in the next month or two.
Glad you asked. yeah, there's a couple of things in the short term that we came up that don't seem like they're, you know, huge investments. One example is, like, there's an ice machine up by the Morro Bay Fish Company that the commercial fishermen use, down by the cleaning station where the public, where they cut up the fish by the boat ramp, you know, maybe having like an ice vending machine there, so those people that were, you know, taking the fish off their boat could refresh their ice chest to transport their loot back home. That was probably the biggest one, and I think there's another minor one in there as well. I mean, the other ones are, you know, fairly large investments, but there's a couple low-hanging fruit, if you will. Thank you.
All right, seeing no more questions, I'll open it up for public comment. Seeing no one in our audience, I will ask Hyland, do we have anybody with their hand raised in the queue? Zoom.
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Seeing no further comments or discussion, I will motion that. Oh, wait, I'm not going to motion. I'm just going to receive and file it. Okay, moving on to item B3. We got an update on the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. And I'll just read what the thing is. On committee's recent activities, we have the staff recap of the fiscal year 21 to 22 waterfront lease minimum and percent gross rent performance. So the chair is Member Witkowski.
Yeah, we met as a Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. We reviewed the prioritization of the capital budget spreadsheets that are attached. We also discussed opportunities for improving relationship with Embarcadero leaseholders, actions we could take there. Discussed the organizational study that's going on for the Harbor Department, and discussed potentially finance involvement or setting up a separate ad hoc committee to make sure we're capitalizing on the upcoming Ironman event. Oh, sorry, one more thing. We also discussed on improving visibility of potential grant money funding we could go for, and how better to communicate matching funds needed for that to the city. That's all.
Okay, and then anybody else on that committee want to add anything for that report? Eric? Okay, so do we have any questions for that committee? All right. So I'm going to open up public comment now. And do we have anybody in the queue with their hand raised? Hylan.
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All right. Well, then I see no further discussion. Go ahead and receive and file that committee's. What?
You want to go through the rest of the?
Yeah. Oh, you mean stuff? The next, the B4?
No, the rest of.
Oh, B3 has more. Oh, okay.
I mean, we can skip it if you want. But.
Well, are you going to discuss it or?
Well, if you'd like.
That's where, okay. I thought I asked if anybody else wanted to talk about the report. Okay, go for it.
Well, so that was the committee we met, was it last week or earlier this week? It's last week. That was just an update on what we met and talked about as a committee. So the rest of the report, since our fiscal year ended in July, or yeah, beginning of July, end of June, and we got all our percent rents in. They mostly come in July, but a few trickle in August, and usually it takes by about the end of August for the final ones to finally come in. And we have gotten all those, and we've tabulated it all up. So I just want to do a quick recap of our lease revenues and kind of how they're derived, just more as a public service announcement than anything else. So our lease rents on the waterfront are derived from either percentage of the appraised value of the property or a percentage of the last 5 years' average total rent received. There's two components to our lease rents. They're the minimum rents or the base rents, whatever you want to call them. There's a minimum amount each leaseholder has to pay every year, and that's the minimum rent or the base rent. And then there's a percent rent, which is that amount of rent in a percentage of their uses, with restaurant, retail, hotel being the big three. And there's different percents for those. How much those add up, and if those exceed the minimum rent, then the leaseholder has to pay the excess beyond the minimum rent. Some lease sites don't generate percent rents just because they're too small. They don't have enough critical mass to get over the percent rent hump. But most probably, I don't know, I'm going to probably say 85, maybe 90% do pay percent rents. So as a hypothetical example, the lease site's minimum rent was $50,000. And their percent gross sales totaled up to a total of $60,000. They pay their $50,000 minimum rent for the year and then an additional 10 because that's what the percent exceeded the minimum by. And so that's how those rents are derived. And so the $10,000 would be the rent we would get in July at the end of their fiscal year. And so they, like I said, they add up all those obligations. Typically, for the big three, retail is 5%. Sit-down restaurants, 3%. Fast food or takeout restaurants are 5%. and then hotels are 5%. Bars, pure bar use is 10%, and there's a few other nuances within the percent rents, but those are basically the big three. So like I said, we get all our lease rents typically in the month of July, and a little bit in August, and we've tabulated them up. This year we've done pretty well. In fact, I think it was our highest percent gross rent year that we've had to date. We collected a total of $1,238,000 in annual minimum rent from the 34 leaseholders, and an additional $742,000 in annual percent gross rents, for a total of $1,980,000, so almost $2 million in percent rents. Those rents represent about 75 to 78% of our total department's budget. The rest of the budget comes from boating revenues, slip pier mooring revenues. From a performance standpoint, the lease site obviously and what the use is and its size is going to dictate how much revenue it can generate. If you've got a little one business operation versus a larger one, of course the larger one's going to outperform the smaller one. But our highest sales generating single waterfront business was Dutchman Seafood House. The runners up to that were Great American Fish Company and Tognazzini's, Dockside 2, which is the one on the wharf. Notice those are all restaurants. Restaurants typically have higher revenues. They also, of course, have higher expenses to go along, but our restaurants typically are the highest revenue producers. Of the total top five rent, so those are the sales producing, gross sales producers, the highest gross sales producers. For the top five total rent producing leaseholders, meaning the site that generated the most rent for the city, those five in order were Marina Square. Of course, it's two blocks long. Tognazzini's Dockside and Dockside 2, which is basically two lease sites, but one leaseholder operating basically one big business operation. Number three was Dutchman Seafood House. Four, Rose's Landing, and five was the Harbor Hut Little Hut. And then the runners up very close behind that were Anderson Inn and Harbor Center. I did not get a chance to really pull out by all the different retail, restaurant, hotel types, who are the top performers in there, but those are the top five for revenue generating for the city. Any questions on any of those before I go to capital?
A pretty good, pretty healthy year then?
Pretty healthy year. It was beyond what we budgeted, beyond our expectations, which was great. We based this year's budgeting estimates on combination of what we were seeing pre-COVID and then what happened in the last COVID year right before this, which was an anomaly. Everyone, I think, expected 2020 to be an absolute crash when the whole world kind of shut down, and it ended up being one of our best years ever. And this year turned out to be much the same. It looks like things are starting to pull back with the COVID phenomena, I think, kind of fading out. So we'll see how it goes on into the future.
Thank you.
I have a question. I think you said somewhere around 85% pay the percent gross, which means like the other 15 are probably annual minimum people. In folks' leases, is it are annual minimums tied to like the 9% CPI increase that we've had since last year? Like, how does that CPI factor into annual minimums?
The annual minimums are adjusted every year by the CPI in their lease, and they're all pretty typically the same. You'll compare a base CPI to the current year CPI and then adjust it up by that. So they all get that for four years, and then on the fifth year we reappraise the lease appraised value of the property and then look at either the appraised value or the average of the last 5 years total rent paid and do the higher of an average of those two.
Thank you.
I have a question about that. Are water leases looked at differently with CPI or totally the same?
Are which?
Water leases.
The whole thing's appraised as total,
following
land
the
and water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The appraiser, well, yes and no. The appraiser, through their appraising methodology, the water lease sites, which basically, a given lease site, let's just say Anderson Inn, there's a land and a water lease, and the land lease is basically from the street to the top of the revetment. The water lease is from the top of the revetment, typically out 50 feet. They're combined together in one lease agreement. When the appraiser comes in and appraises that property, there's a land component and a water component, and they do have different appraised values, with water typically being about half of what the land appraised value is. It also depends on what the use is. Like Anderson Inn has nothing really going on in their water lease except some hangover of the restaurant from the land. So it also depends on what is going on in the water.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else on that?
I'll move forward on that.
So onto the capital part. So the, as Mary said, we looked at the capital spreadsheets, which are an ongoing work in progress that we've been working on for probably a good 6 or 7 years now, and trying to assess what our capital needs are from both a maintenance and repair and replacement standpoint, but also from a cost standpoint. And we've developed these lease site, or these spreadsheets over the years, continually refining them. I will see the city in its annual budget this year budgeted for a capital needs assessment citywide, about half of which is going to be waterfront infrastructure. So we're going to be looking at all the city's infrastructure, both uptown and down below on the waterfront, and with a consultant and assessing what the capital needs are from what the physical need is and a cost associated with it. So we'll be feeding our data into that as well, and hopefully that'll end up coming out with a real true picture of what we need. As far as the spreadsheets go, we've tried to simplify them as much as we can and make them as fairly intuitive as possible. The methodology, you've got a capital major maintenance and repair, which means, things like north and south T-pier. You don't typically, after 20, 30, 40, 50 years, replace a pier in kind all by as one big entity. Every 15 to 20 years, you go in and you put in a couple $1 million and do major upgrades. That's how piers are worked. Slips, while they'll get replaced every X number of years, you'll go in occasionally and do some major upgrades to them. And so all of these costs we've attempted to account into here and then prioritize them and then cost them out over time. In the center columns, where they say the fiscal year requirements, we are 1 year behind on getting these spreadsheets updated, so everything's kind of compressed one more year. But basically the methodology there is what we should be spending each year, both in from a project standpoint of, hey, we need to do such and such a project on the North T-Pier and it costs X number of tens of thousands of dollars. That is a number that goes into column. And also, we need to start putting away money for the next big cycle. So over the next 20 years, we need to put away, say, $500,000 over 20 years is another X number of dollars. So it represents both those financial needs, both the stuff we need to spend right now and what we need to put away for the future. And so then everything tabulates down and shows you what, kind of our overall need is. And it's a pretty big number, both from a replacement standpoint and from a maintenance and repair standpoint. A couple of points on this current fiscal year. On the maintenance and repair spreadsheet, there's a kind of a middle left column that has approved and or funded. $10,000 we put away to our ice machine. That's our obligation under our lease with Santa Monica Seafood to have some money to be able to put into the maintenance of that machine. And then on the replacement spreadsheet, there's two projects on there. One is $600,000 for replacement of our Beach Street slips, which we're currently working on contracting for our engineers and other design consultants, and anticipating getting that project under construction hopefully this winter. The south slips, which are basically the slips immediately north of Stack's Wine Bar, the first six slips right in there. So it's estimated $600,000 to do those. And then we've budgeted $210,000. That came from sales tax money, Measure E money, to do design engineering and planning for replacing the launch ramp, public boat launch ramp, the concrete ramp itself, and the abutments, and then the boarding floats and any piling work that needs to be done, basically to put together a full concept and cost estimating plan to apply for a boating and waterways grant, which we would anticipate applying for and hopefully getting in the fiscal year 23-24, so that you see the couple numbers down the line there, $321,000 and $623,000. That's our estimate to do the actual project itself. So that's what that $210,000 is to get us basically sort of design ready to apply for a grant from boating and waterways. And then I guess another potentially funded project this year is, everybody should know, federal earmarks is the bad word. It's congressionally directed spending now, but it's earmarks. It's pet projects for congresspeople and senators to get into their into their states, into their constituencies. And those have come back from a hiatus of about 10 years. And Congress folks and congresspeople and senators have, you know, request of their constituencies, you know, what they'd like to see. And so we, as a city of Morro Bay, put together a number of projects and cost estimations and submitted them to our congressional representatives. And Congressman Carbajal picked up $1.5 million of a requested $3.8 million to rehab our North T Pier. One, because it needs it, and two, we anticipate offshore wind coming to town and want to start getting ready for that. And it's also an asset for our Harbor Patrol and our Coast Guard and the Fish and Wildlife Patrol boat as well. So it's survived, I think, all the House budget committees. It's now getting ready to go over to the Senate. And if it survives the Senate and gets into the President's budget for FY23, we'll be on the road there to put $1.5 million into the North T Pier. Any questions on any of that?
I see one that's sort of the, although it's a priority to the inn at Morro Bay, the $3 million, that's probably for, given 21, 22. I mean, that's kind of a, who's really responsible for that?
That seawall down there is on a lease site, an unleased lease site. Gene, I'm sure, remembers. But the Golden Tee, which is what the Inn at Morro Bay used to be. It used to have a little marina out front there.
Yeah.
And it went away in 1980s, mid-80s?
Early 80s.
And they gave up the lease. Subsequent purchasers of that property maintained that lease for a while, but then they gave it up after I think the marina was gone, and subsequent owners have not, well, they've expressed some interest in putting a marina or putting some kind of facility down there. Nobody's entered into the agreement yet, and so basically from about 20 feet back from the edge of that seawall is where the lease line is. So, and it's, that seawall is in the process of successive failure, and so it's been fenced off for, boy, at least 10 years?
20 years.
It's been fenced off for quite a while because it's unsafe for vehicles to park on, so it's it was basically parking spaces for the, yeah, for the hotel, and it's unusable for that now.
Basically just going to, unless somebody has deep pockets, sit there and rot.
Well, it's part of our assessment. And, mm-hmm, and your number, your, I think part of your comment might have been in the number, maybe a little low, which it is. We're constantly reassessing these numbers and trying to get good good valuations on it all.
Okay, thanks.
Originally, when the lease site went back to the city there, I think that, I'm not sure who paid for it, but they put in some temporary pilings. They weren't pilings, they were just telephone poles with very thin creosote on them. So that's more or less stabilized the front, but it's not marine construction. So it's failing at this point. So it was temporary, 30 years temporary.
Any other questions? Okay, so. That concludes that. I'll open public comment for that. Seeing no one in the audience with their hand raised. Hadland, do we have anybody in the queue via Zoom?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. So we will receive and file the budget committee. Moving on to our last item, which is B4, which is Harbor Advisory Board Member Public Engagement Outreach. I'm going to start over with Member Dowdy.
Well, as I mentioned before, I talked to the sport fishing guys, and salmon season is over with. Private boats are still catching some halibut offshore, and I've seen a few halibut caught in the bay lately.
And Member Myers, I know you.
I'm out of order. I always get that wrong. So nothing else.
All right. And Chris Vail, Sean Green.
Yeah, first off, this is something that we've briefly talked about on HAB before, and it's more of a, has been a planning commission function, but this notion of public benefits in relation to new construction projects and major redevelopments is kind of rising up the ranks and going to be heard at upcoming meetings. So it's something that that I've certainly worked with an ad hoc committee on the Planning Commission on and put together a pretty lengthy report. I'm not sure to what extent that'll appear in upcoming agendas, but my understanding is that this September's Public Works meeting and I think October's Harbor meeting, this issue might come up on the agenda. Is that right, Eric?
Hopefully the October agenda.
Okay.
A member, Joe Ingrafia, from that subcommittee recently contacted me about running it through the Harbor Advisory Board. I guess they've finally gotten it to a point where they're ready to daylight some of that stuff and run it through the advisory body. So I'll be working with him to hopefully get on October's agenda.
Perfect. There might already be a well-written agenda already, or at least get to the point where there might not be a ton of extra work to get it on the agenda, hopefully. But yeah, Joe Ingrafia, Mike Rodriguez, and myself are part of that ad hoc committee. And basically, as it pertains to this advisory board and anyone that you know in town, if folks have ideas for things, small or large, like public niceties, I guess might be a way to say that, public infrastructure items, beautification projects. Sometimes it could even be service related, but think more in terms of infrastructure. If we need a new restroom down at the waterfront, we're always looking for funding opportunities. And perhaps if there's a huge project that comes into town, they can be paired with some of these projects or saddled with some of these projects. And yeah, we're just looking for as much input as we possibly can get. So keep an eye out for the agenda, the public works agenda, if you want to chime in sooner rather than later. Otherwise, October, probably at the Harbor Advisory Board, there'll be an opportunity to talk about this a little bit as well. The other thing I wanted to mention, so I'm on the I'm Cal Poly liaison as well. When I was on Tourism Advisory Board, one thing that I always pushed for, and it sometimes fell on deaf ears, the notion that if our city can sort of capture the business from these incoming Cal Poly parents, like let's say first year freshmen move in weekend, then oftentimes, and I'm seeing, I mean, just anecdotally, more and more success every year when we capture these 18-year-olds and their parents that first year, we get 4 years worth of tourism out of it. So. This could, you know, to some extent, to a lesser extent, Cuesta is part of this as well, but especially those out-of-towners at Cal Poly. And so why I bring this up right now is if you guys can pay attention, starting now, today's September 1st, right? Keep an eye out when you're around town, especially down the waterfront and downtown, and see if you can sense or even ask some folks, are these Cal Poly parents, are these Cal Poly grandparents, are these Cal Poly students, which we're seeing more and more in our local coffee shops that we didn't see even 5-7 years ago. I'm kind of looking for ideas to go back to Tourism Advisory Board and I'm sure Erica would love to hear some ideas about how we capture this Cal Poly opportunity to bring in dollars to our businesses. So just kind of pay attention, especially Tuesday the 13th and Wednesday the 14th are the official Cal Poly freshman move-in days. My instinct is that there's probably some Airbnbs and hotels being rented here in town on that Sunday or Monday, people turning a long weekend because they don't want to say goodbye to their kid before they get empty nest syndrome. So those are my 2 points, I guess.
Yeah, the irony is my son went to Cal Poly. We stayed here in town. That's how I fell in love with Morro Bay about 10 years ago.
See, and that's an ROI that can't be measured. So we have these marketing firms that are trying to figure out, we spent $10,000 15 years ago on this thing. How do we understand if it worked? Well, Cal Myers moved here. That, I mean, that's the kind of long-term investment that we sort of hope works over time.
So it's the move-in date is August 13th and 14th?
Yeah, that's the first year and transfer student move-in.
I wish Eric was here when you said. September.
September 13th and
14th. September. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. If the kids are coming back, or yeah, September. We're in September now. So, that's really good news. And that's the weekend before is the Avo Margarita Festival. So maybe we will capture some of those that way. But wish Erica was here to hear that one. She might already know it. Okay. Mary?
No updates for me.
I guess I have one more question, Sean. You said that the public benefits was going to be on the Planning Commission. Is that going to be next Tuesday evening?
No, it's already been heard at the Planning Commission level twice, and so Planning Commission has asked, and Planning staff has asked for outside feedback on what we put together. So Public Works Advisory Board is going to look at it. As well as
okay, and then it will go back to
Planning Commission okay. for more greater consideration. Yeah.
Okay, good to know. Thank you. For my outreach, the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders, they haven't been meeting just because it's been such a busy summer, busier than last summer in some ways, which is record breaking. But we're all really busy and we do have a meeting coming up. One of the things that I plan to talk to them about is what kind of recognition would they like to receive when they find out that they were one of the top performers, and how can we do something that would benefit them, and so they would know what their dollars are going for, are respected and grateful, and the things that we can do with them, you know, with our budget. So I want to get their feedback on what kind of thing, a plaque, a sticker, an award, who knows, but I'm going to work on that in the next, before the next meeting with us. I do know that one of the master leaseholders on the Embarcadero, which is the Libertine, next Tuesday, does have a Planning Commission. He's on the agenda, so if anybody is interested in tuning into that, I know that that's going to be on the Planning Commission. So that.
Do we know what their plan is?
Well, they're in a COL. The City Council has approved it, and so just an update, or I'm not sure, but I do know that it's on there, and I read it, so I'm going to tune in and see what it is they're going to talk about. So, okay. So I believe that concludes. Any questions about anybody else's outreach? Well, thank you very much, everybody. We have one more item of business, and that is, does anybody want to have a request for a future agenda item?
Yes, I would like to have a future agenda item to discuss whether or not it makes sense to create an Ironman subcommittee.
I second that that notion, if we need that.
Okay. And do we need no motion? No motion, but do we need to have a vote of how many people want to add it as an agenda item?
Just need to know how many people support it, and if we get over the threshold, it can be future agenda.
So in order to know how many people support it.
I'm in.
Yeah. Okay, you're good.
It looks unanimous. Okay.
Almost felt like a vote.
Okay, so does anyone else have a declaration of a future agenda item? See none, I will.
Just a question, Cal. Do we need to get?
No, I'll make it happen.
Okay.
Okay. And we're adjourned. Yay! Nope, we don't have to make a motion. All right. Thank you, everybody, and anybody that's listening to us in the recording. Have a lovely weekend. It's going to be triple digits. Not here, but everybody will be here because it's triple digits if you even drive 5 miles in. All right.